Ahlan wa sahlan and welcome to another episode of Arab Voices, coming to you from the studios of KPFT Houston since 2002. Houston's community station, 90.1 FM and FM HD1. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. This show is syndicated and it airs on other radio stations in different cities in the US and Europe. A quick update on the issue we discussed on this program 3 weeks ago regarding the blocking of $75 million already approved and earmarked for food assistance by the U.S. administration to Palestinian refugees in the occupied Gaza Strip and West Bank that are urgently needed but were blocked by two politicians. Well, the latest is that Representative Michael McCaul of Texas has lifted his hold on the money. That's good news. But Senator James Risch of Idaho has not lifted his hold. So he is the only politician remaining who refuses to provide urgently needed and already approved food assistance to Palestinian refugees. So UNRWA USA, whom we've talked with its representative, Lynn Sultan, on this program, UNRWA is the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestine Refugees in the Near East, pre-drafted a letter people can use, urging Secretary of State Blinken to override Senator Reach's hold. I have a link to that letter on our website, arabvoices.net, under the Mentioned on Air section. In this episode of Arab Voices, episode number 1076, I will air some of the remarks I recorded at an event held in Houston, Texas, on March 14, 2023, about the Edward Said Library that serves thousands of Palestinian children, youth, and families in the Gaza Strip and Jerusalem. Founder of the Edward Said Library, Musab Abu Toha, and Middle East Children's Alliance Executive Director, Ziad Shamroush, spoke at the event about the Edward Said Library. Musab Abu Toha also performed a reading from his most recent volume of poetry, Things You May Find Hidden in My Ear, Poems from Gaza. By the way, Musab's book is a winner of the Palestine Book Award, a National Book Critics Circle Award for Poetry finalist, and it has just won a few days ago the American Book Award. I'm going to air Musab's reading of selected poems from his book, but first, let's listen to the remarks about the Edward Said Library. And we'll begin with the opening remarks delivered by one of the event organizers, Joe Shada, followed by the remarks of Ziad Shamroush, Middle East Children's Alliance Executive Director.
My name is Joe Shada. I just want to welcome each and every one of you for coming today. I want to share with you why I'm supporting this library and why I feel that this library is very, very worth our support. When I was growing up, my father is a clergyman. And growing up, you know, I grew up with a lot of Syrians, Lebanese, and, you know, Western Pennsylvania is loaded with them. And they're all like me. They're third generation. You know, we kid me on Sundays. But I'd never really kind of delved into who I am and what I am and where I come from. And as we kind of move on in the world, I mean, I'm 55, and the more I realize, you know, I walk people out of the house and I stand on the front porch and I wave to them as they leave. And my wife can't figure out, my wife is Honduran, she can't figure out why I do that. And I can't figure out why I do that. Right? So, and I knew when I was in college, I kind of had some idea, but at the end of the day, my culture is important to me. And the people, Syrians, Lebanese, Jordanians, and Palestinians, we are the same people. They drew lines, the Europeans drew these lines and said, no, you're a Lebanese, no, you're a Syrian, you're a Palestinian. And they drew, they basically separated us. But our literature is the same, our causes are the same, our people are the same, we eat the same stuff, right? We look the same. Well, I mean, you know, right? I mean, we're all very hairy, right? Guys, not the women. But the reason why I support this library is because I feel like a big part of the reason why we are where we are in this world is because where we come from, right? I mean, the people who I saw growing up, they got off of a boat or they got off of an airplane and they didn't have two nickels to rub in their pocket, right? They had nothing. And they worked and they made something of themselves. They were honest. They worked hard, all right? They were smart. They were honorable. All these things. When I was a kid, I had a gentleman named Jake Salem, I had a paper out, and I was 12 years old, and I was delivering these papers, and this guy was a cantor in the church where my dad was a priest. And Mr. Salem would bring me in, and he would sit me down, and he would show me the financial pages, and he would talk to me about stocks and bonds and investments. Well, I didn't know, but this guy was the richest guy in the whole county, and he came from Lebanon with nothing in his pocket. Right? And how many people do we in this room know your fathers were that way, right? I mean, your uncles were that way. Everybody can touch somebody like that. So if you think about it, that's one big reason. That's our culture. We outperform people. I'm sorry, but we do. All right? I mean, we have more per capita millionaires with our little, from Le Blad El Sham, than I mean, the Yahud are up there too, right? I mean, but at the end of the day, the Yahud and the right? They right? They learn from us. Thank you, Claudia. Thank you. They learn from us. I like that. But I mean, at the end of the day, it's all true, right? Well, you know, looking back years ago, 3 years ago, I had the opportunity to meet this gentleman, the founder of the First Library. And I was reading Al Jazeera one day, and it was an article. It was about the Librarian of Gaza. Is that the name of the title of the article, right? And I read about this and I said, so the Israelis bomb Gaza and destroy the library. And this man was a graduate English literature student at the University of Gaza. And he gathered up all these books and he took these books and he put them in an apartment next to his so that they wouldn't get lost, so people can still touch them. Because it wasn't like there was a gazillion, you know, our English-speaking English books in Gaza, right? So this was, he has the largest collection of English literature or English books in Gaza, in Palestine. And then he starts doing reaching out for donations, and people are sending him books, and they're sending him a couple dollars here and a couple dollars there, and he's having these English lessons, and he's allowing people to use his computers and all these things that he's done. And I'm like, this dude did it all on a shoestring. And I think to myself, you know, we really can't do a lot for them over there, all right? We can't, but we can give them his education. And this is an opportunity to give them education. So the first thing is there are people. And the second thing is we're giving them an opportunity for education. The third thing is I think to myself, well, you know, I mean, you never know where the money's going. And that's what I heard from a lot of people. You don't know where the money's going. And I said, well, okay, well, we're going to need to, you know, we're going to need to have some vehicle to get it through there. And I spoke with Donna. What was Donna's last name? Donna Bruneski from Rebuild Alliance, who was wonderful. And she's like, you know, I think this is a great idea. I wanted to introduce Musab, and she and Musab talked and they got to know each other. And she said, I got this guy. She says, this other group called Mecca. And I said, okay, cool. And I looked them up and they're clean. They have a very good reputation. They score high on the charity, the Charity Watch. All right, they're an A listed, so I feel comfortable. If I'm giving somebody a check, it's not going out the back door to buy his cousin a Camaro, right? So we have a good 501(c) in place. We have a good mission, right? And then I thought to myself, well, what's the plan? And Ziad says to me, okay, well, I'll talk to Musab and we want to open another library. Well, where are we going to open it at? Gaza City. Okay. Well, what's it going to cost? Well, it costs us about $40,000. The first one cost us about $40,000. I said, okay, cool. Let's pull the trigger. And everybody kind of came together and did that. And then we opened another one in Silwan. So, and each one cost us about $20,000 to $25,000 to run it a year. And I think to myself, $20,000 to $25,000, that's nothing. All right, that's nothing. To give people knowledge, to give people access to programs, they can learn to read and write English. They can learn computer programming. They can learn e-commerce. They can learn languages. You got Duolingo. You've got all these things that you can stream into them. I'd love for us to be able to, we have a poet that you're supposed to meet tomorrow. Are you supposed to meet a poet tomorrow, Musab? The poet from San Antonio? Okay, and it would be great to be able to stream her and let our people there touch her and let her guide, hey, let's find the next Musab, right? Because they're over there, right? Our people are the smartest people. I mean, you know, what'd they say? Palestinian people before 1948 were the best educated Arabs in the whole Levant, right? I mean, and there's a reason for that, okay? We're stable, and there's a reason in Syria with everything that happened in Syria. Germany loves us because we're smart, we're hardworking, we're family-oriented, and we're dedicated to success, right? So we've got everything we really need as a group of people. So now we've got three libraries started. We've got a track record that's already built. It's not like we're coming and saying, hey, you know, we got this idea. The idea's there, all right? We're offering services to people. So what we're trying to do is, in this first year, build bridges, raise awareness, and let's bolster what we're doing. And the way I feel about it is, if we were to take this and say, you know, we want to open one more library this year, and wherever that's going to be, I don't care, as long as we're touching more people. We want to take what we're doing in these libraries and offering more services to people. Stay open a little bit longer, all right? The other thing it does is it gives people their jobs. It gives people, what is the Gaza unemployment rate? 50%? I mean, half the people don't have jobs, and it's not like they're morons. It's like they don't have opportunity, right? And where do you get the opportunity? The opportunity is driven through education, right? So we're doing two things. We're educating the people, and we're gonna start with the children, because at the end of the day, what can they do for a 55-year-old guy? I'm setting my ways, right? You're setting your ways, right? I mean, at the end of the day, we are. But this, by dealing with the children and lifting them up, giving them opportunities, letting them see something outside of the 150 square miles that they get to look at every day for the rest of their life. So when I was in college, the Edwards site, what kind of brought me to Musab was when I was in college, I went to school, an undergraduate in upstate New York, and I was walking through Todd Union, and I see this flyer about this Columbia University professor with an Arabic last name, Edward Said, is talking at our school. And the Yahud were crazy. I mean, they were like, they're trying to rip these posters down. And I was like, and I had a friend of mine, she was Lebanese. And she goes, you got to hear this guy. All right, cool, fine. So I go get this book called Orientalism. And I read this book. And I was like, this makes sense why I go out on the porch and wave to you as you drive off, you know? I mean, it's like that. This thing makes sense to me now. And I make sense to myself. Well, hearing that man speak really allowed me to see who I am, what I am, and why I am the way I am. You know, we're not all the same, right? But we know what good kanafi tastes like, right? And we know how to treat other people, right? I just want to close by saying, last night I had the opportunity to have dinner with these two fine gentlemen. And Ziad was telling us about when he, back in the 60s and the 70s, that during the occupation, the Israelis wouldn't let them have books. And they had to hide books. And I didn't know. I mean, I didn't know it was that bad. I didn't know it was like that. And I thought to myself, you know, that's the same thing that they did to the American black in the South. And that's the same thing that they did to the black in under apartheid South Africa. And they're doing that same stuff to our people. Now, at the end, guys, I mean, you know, who's going to stop that? If we don't stand up and stop that, who's going to stop that? They're going to just keep piping us. And we're going to go by the way of the American Indian, right? I mean, unfortunately, you don't hear anything about the great Choctaw Nation. You don't hear anything about the Sioux. I mean, these people, there were gazillions and gazillions of Sioux that were running around the plains with a very successful civilization. If we don't do something, our civilization is going to go by the wayside. It's going to get whitewashed by the occupation. And it's not like Syria can do anything about it. It's not like Lebanon can do anything about it. All right? It's not like Iraq can do anything about it. It's not like Jordan can do anything about it. At the end, we have to stand up as people from there and do something about this. Because if not now, when? If not us, who? So thank you so much for being here, for moving your schedules around, and for being part of this. I so appreciate it, and you make my heart feel good. So thank you.
My name is Ziad Abbas. Now, actually, first I want to start thanking Ramallah Club. And second, I want to thank, of course, Josh Hada. And it's not easy to follow you, to be honest with you. Are you running for the office, something? It seems you are really into it. And you, and for me, I don't need me to speak, actually. You did very well. And I want to thank Joe, not just for organizing this, and from the beginning. And I'm not going that much to the history because Musab, he will go to the history. But first, for me, having the first time, like, we as Mecca, I'm working in Mecca, Middle East Children's Alliance. And when we heard from Edward Said's wife, Mona, right? Maryam Said, you will hear from her later. And we jumped in. Musab, he was in Gaza, started the library, we heard about it. And of course, we said, yeah, we will jump in. It's risky sometimes to take new projects. But for us, for two reasons. First, because Maryam Said is very close to us in Mecca. The second, Edward Said himself. And here we need to honor the Edward Said, actually. And Mecca, this year, actually, will be 35 years for Mecca since it was started. And Edward Said, he was in the advisory board of Mecca. And he was among the first few people to come to do events, fundraising events, like this event, by the way. Edward Said, he did like three events for Mecca. And like many others, like Chomsky, like Marcel Khalifa, like many other big names in the history of our organization. This is one reason. The second reason with Joe, when we met with Joe the first time, and I see you are a little bit mixed with the numbers. The first time you donated, my friend, you donated $50,000. And the $50,000, it was helped us. Musab started that tiny library, and later we opened the big one and expand the first one. And you will see in the videos, I'm not going to talk that much about the libraries because you will hear from them more than us, and you will hear from the founder. And Joe, to be honest with you, you were like shocked us. At the same time, you were in on it. And we appreciate this a lot. I say that as Mecca, I say that as a Palestinian, and I say that from our partners in the ground. In Silwan, Mada, they know, and in Youth Vision, and of course, Musab from the first contacts too with Joe. And for us, it's something where it makes the work working well for us. And the other thing is, sometime for me, as I was born in a refugee camp and grew up in a refugee camp, and I moved here in 2008. I came to Houston. I know I remember some of you. And we met. I came here with a dancing group called Dibda in 2005. And we performed here in Houston. And by the way, we are coming back in October. We'll check with you later. But what I want to say is that the connection here played good for us and played very important for the new generation. And yeah, in our culture, I say that, not in 60s, I'm not that old. I'm expired, but not that old. In 70s and 80s, we used to hide the books in plastics. And it wasn't dangerous books. It's not about how to create a nuclear weapons. It's just simple books. And sometimes for Palestinian writers, sometimes for Arab writers, and sometimes for international writers. For example, Ghassan Kanafani books. You were not allowed to have it in West Bank. This is according to the Israeli military law. My mom, she never went to a school, but my mom, any book in the house all the time, take it when they impose curfew, put it in the plastic digging and hide it. And even I told you last night a joke where the people, they used to hide the books around their houses in the camp. I'm not saying just my camp, all West Bank and Gaza Strip. It's a military order. You are not allowed to have certain kind of books in your home. And actually, it's impact us. We don't have the culture of to have your own library inside the house, because all the time they target that. And one time, actually, we had a heavy, heavy rain, and the camp, this is in early 80s, so many stone walls collapsed, and you can see some some book. Really, this is real happening in the camp. And there are different kind of books. I'm not going to see with the issue. So the urgent, even for me to have a library, actually we are working with many projects in Lebanon and Gaza and West Bank, and I will show a little bit very quick about the work. The library is very important, but having people like you, and to be honest with you, I say it all the time, when the people, hey, I don't want your help as American. I say, we want you to stop your help to Israel first. This is the amazing help for us. And second, it's not about help and charity. It's about solidarity. And this is the work we are looking for all the time. Because I was born in 1964 in the end of the survival phase of the refugees. Because since the Nakba until even mid-60s, we were in the survival phase. And I'm not going that deep. Another presentation. We can do it. But I was born in that period, and we moved to the creative phase as Palestinian, including Palestinian refugees, where you find yourself stand online to receive the food from United Nations, and you feel devastated. It's the most hurtful to be standing in line to receive support from United Nations, where you stand like you here, look my shoulders up, I'm very proud who I am. I'm very proud as a Palestinian refugee. And this is came through books, not just through my mom, education, and through our community, but it came through books to learn all the time. And to be honest with you, I learned English in prison. On a drug. No, not on drugs. Most of the Palestinians, they were like everyone, every house, and everywhere you go in Palestine, they went to prison. And I learned my English. And actually, in my school, United Nations school, I learned that Columbus discovered America. When I went to prison the first time, I find out Columbus did not discover America. America, they were the native people, they were living here. It's the same for us, Palestine. And this is why the library and the books is very important for us. And I can go for a long time. Just I want to explain a little bit about the work. Can you take, they don't need to see me, they need to hear me maybe. I will share with you a few things, and after that, Mus'ab. These are our partners here, actually, Mecca, where I am working. We are based in Berkeley, and we have Ru'ya Shababiya Youth Vision. It's based in Gaza, and they are leading the libraries, the two libraries now in Gaza, and we have Mada Center in Silwan. But for us in Mecca, we are working different kind of projects. The library, it was one of our projects. I will go very fast. We're targeting the children in different way in Palestine, in Gaza, West Bank, 1948, and we work in Lebanon. We have almost the same activities, almost the similar in many locations between Gaza, West Bank, and in Lebanon. We have other projects targeting the young girls, actually, and mostly in Gaza Strip, and including the other activities connected to libraries too. But we care about health, we care about water, we care about like emergency medical relief. We work in different fields. And here I want to say something, actually, it's very important for us. I am, despite the fact I was born and grew up in a refugee camp, right now I'm living here in the United States. But, and I give a credit to the people in the ground in Palestine. This is what's keep the work. And I say that not just because they're resilient, they are really very resilient. At the same time, they are very, very creative. They lead our work as we, as organization, we follow their leads. And to be honest here, I'm biased. I was educated by my mom. She was the one influenced me who I am. And most of our projects succeed by women. In Gaza and West Bank and in East Jerusalem and in Lebanon, women, they are playing big role in this kind of work. Even in the libraries, women, they are doing amazing work in Silwan or in Gaza libraries. And this is something like kept us all the time. We try to develop and to expand our... And there is a huge need, to be honest with you, on the ground. Right now, I know we think about books. I know here in the United States right now, you have your own digitalized books, right? Right, guys? People sometimes, they don't buy books itself. They are going, they download the book or they order online. They have the, they can listen in their cars, etc. And we are moving, actually. We are thinking to move to that step with our libraries. And in Silwan right now, they are thinking how to do that because there are possibilities more than Gaza, the people they can access online books and to work in this. In any case, I don't want to say that much. I will come back again later. But I want to give the chance for our colleague and Musab. Your work actually can speak on all the great things you did. First, I want to say Musab, he published a book, The Things You May Find Hidden in My Ears. And this is a new book. We have not that many copies here. And he can sign it for you, but you can go online and order it too. This is an amazing book. This book is nominated. I forget the name, sorry. Yeah, and it's written a lot about this book. And this is amazing, amazing writer. Musab is someone, you find him all over in the social media, many writers. And I can tell you, like you have Chomsky, he was sending emails about Edward Said Library. And you have Michael Moore. I'm sure you know Michael Moore, guys, the filmmaker. He tweeted about Edward Said Library. And you have many people, because the work, this library, it's not just a book and shelves and books. It's a lot of activities. And you will see later in the videos after Musab will finish. I want to like to introduce Musab as a friend, as someone who really influenced our work. And this is the way we can say the Israelis, they have a problem, guys, the Zionists, I can say. Palestinian, from generation to generation, we are pushing and we are coming more creative. And here, I am one generation before you. You are the generation after me. And you are coming in a very strong way. I will leave it for you. Welcome, Musab.
You're listening to Arab Voices, originating on KPFT Houston since 2002 and syndicated on other radio stations in different cities in the U.S. and Europe. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. What you just heard were the remarks delivered by Ziad Abbas Shamroush, Middle East Children's Alliance Executive Director, speaking in Houston, Texas, about the Edward Said Library. Next, we will listen to the remarks of the founder of the Edward Said Library, Musab Abu Toha, who will also read some of his poems from his book, Things You May Find Hidden in My Ear, Poems from Gaza. Musab Abu Toha is a Palestinian poet, scholar, and librarian who was born in Gaza and has spent his life there. A graduate in English language teaching and literature, he taught English at the United Nations Relief and Works Agency schools in Gaza from 2016 until 2019, and he is the founder of the Edward Said Library, Gaza's first English language library. His writings from Gaza have appeared in The Nation, Aerosmith Press, and Literary Hub. His poems have been published widely worldwide, and his newest book, Things You May Find Hidden in My Ear, Poems from Gaza, is winner of the Palestine Book Award and a National Book Critics Circle Award for Poetry finalist, and it won a few days ago the 2023 American Book Award. Congratulations, Musab.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Musab Abu Toha, and I am a Palestinian poet who was born in a refugee camp in the Gaza Strip. So me and Ziad, I didn't know him before I started communicating with him. So we share the same thing. We come from a refugee camp. He was working with a group of young people in the Ibda' team. And I was trying to maybe do something similar to what he was doing, but in the Gaza Strip. So as all of you know, as a Palestinian from the Gaza Strip, I've never been to the West Bank. So the first time I could meet someone outside of Gaza was in a foreign country, not on the land of Palestine. So I'll tell you the story of how I started the Edward Said Public Library. So in 2014, Israel attacked Gaza for about 51 days. And one of the targets, as always, is a university building. I was about to graduate in the summer of 2014, but Israel attacked Gaza for 51 days in 2014. And during that same war, I lost 3 very close friends. And our house was partially damaged by an Israeli airstrike next to our house. And one of the targets was the administration building of my alma mater, the Islamic University of Gaza. So one of the results of that attack is that I had my graduation ceremony postponed for a few months. And also one of my colleagues and very close friends who was killed, he did not attend the graduation ceremony, but his family came not to get his certificate, but to get a portrait of their son with the university name on it. So in that administration building, there was the English department where I used to go and meet my professors, for example, after lectures or after exams, etc. And during a ceasefire, I went to the university building. It was, as you can see, it was very dangerous to enter the building in this condition. But I ventured and I went to that department. And some of the things that I saw were books under the rubble in that department, and of course other departments. So one of the books that I found was that, maybe you cannot see the title of the book, but it was the Norton Anthology of American Literature. So it was, I think it was very ironic to see an American language literature book, that very famous book, buried under the rubble of a building that was destroyed by American-funded weapons. So there lies the irony here. So, and also at the same time, my house, especially the room where we had a lot of books, was partially damaged by an Israeli airstrike. And the first thing I saw when we returned to our house was our books being pierced by shrapnel. So I posted a photo of myself with this book, along with another photo of our badly damaged book collection in our house. And people on Facebook started communicating with me, suggesting that they can send books to compensate for the collection I lost. So it happened because they wanted to help me as an individual. So Joe mentioned that I had lots of books in one apartment in Gaza, but in fact the books that I was collecting were in my living room because I didn't have a big place. So I was putting these books in my living room, and when the number of books exceeded 600 books, I started, you know, this Facebook page, which is called Library and Bookshop for Gaza. I still didn't have the name Edward Said for the library. So it was a library and bookshop for Gaza. And many more people started to send books. And then I think that was enough. I mean, 600 books is a big number of books. So why don't we start collecting donations to rent a place where the 600 books can be shared by other people? And one of the people who got in touch with me is a famous American poet named Katha Pollitt. She is a columnist for The Nation. She introduced herself that she is a poet and she would like to help the library grow and grow and get more support. And then I told her about the name that I would like to have for the library. And she said, why don't you contact Maryam Said? So that was in 2016. I didn't have her email address, but she did, because she is in New York and she knows a lot of people. So she sent me Maryam Said's email address. And I got in touch with Maryam and told about myself and the library I'm working on, and it's named after this important man. And during that time, I launched a fundraising campaign on Indiegogo. It was a very hard experience because in Gaza, it's very, very difficult to get to create a bank account from through which you can receive money from abroad. And in Gaza, because Gaza is not only occupied by Israel, but it suffers from the political rift between the West Bank and the Gaza Strip, between the two main parties, Hamas and Fatah. So one of the punishments that is being imposed on Gaza is that you cannot create a new charity organization and get donation from abroad, etc. So I personally struggled a lot to find someone who could receive the money that I was raising. So I told Maryam about that. So we started this. So these are a photo of the books that I was storing in my house. And, you know, I mean, I don't want to talk a lot about Edward Said, but Edward Said is the most famous Palestinian-American intellectual in the world. And he is the author of Orientalism, most important 100 books in the 20th century by The Guardian. But Edward Said was not only an intellectual and a writer, but he was Palestinian, just like most of you. But again, although he was a successful academic in Columbia, at Columbia University, he taught at Columbia for 40 years, and he could live very easily teaching comparative literature to American people, but he decided to stand up for his people. So he wrote his book, The Question of Palestine, and covering Islam, about how media portrays people in their films. And he got a lot of hard time because of that. His office, for example, was burnt at Columbia University. He wasn't published in major American magazines because of what he is. And he also was part of the Palestine National Council, from which he resignated in the early 1990s when the Oslo Accords were being discussed. So that's why I think Edward Said was a very important person that I needed to honor as a Palestinian refugee. And I later knew that, I mean, I was 10 months old when Edward visited Gaza for the first time. That was in 1993. So Edward visited Gaza, and there is a documentary about that. So I wish I could meet him when he was there, but I was 10 months old. And this is a photo of one of the books that Maryam Said sent to the library. And as you can see, the book has this stamp, gift from the Said family, which was a very important sign from the family. And Maryam Said herself donated $1,000. And she shared the word about the library amongst her friends. And when I told her about the project, the fundraising went very quick. You know, the first target was $15,000, and I was able, along with other people in Gaza who believed in the cause. So I rented a very small apartment in North Gaza in a town called Beit Lahia. This was taken in 2017. So this space was very, sorry, I think, yeah. So this, in this space, you can see the rooms are very crowded. They are not big. They were not big enough for many kids to come and read. So I started another fundraising campaign to get more money in order to rent a bigger place. So Mecca still wasn't on the line with us. So I told Maryam about the difficulties we were facing because we lacked any legal status to receive money from abroad. So she suggested Mecca. She put me in touch with Ziyad Abbas. And I think working with Mecca and also later Joe on our side helping fundraising, I think these two aspects helped build the library, not only physically, but also we were able to launch other projects. I think maybe in the videos they will show the library is not only about books, but we were able to have some music lessons. We had a computer lab where people, especially from the camps, because one of the Gaza library is located near Al Refugee Camp that's called Ash-Shati' Camp, where I was born, and it's the second biggest refugee camp in the Gaza Strip. So this is a photo of the second branch, which was opened thanks to Joe's generous donation of $50,000 in 2019. And the library was, this second branch was opened on the birthday of Edward Said in September 25th, 2019. So as you can see here, this is the computer lab. There is a meeting room. So you can see here, there is song. If you enter the library, you would hear children learning music. In another room, people learning how to create some programs or learn how to use PowerPoint or Microsoft Word. And there are also reading clubs in the library. So people are not only coming to borrow books and just leave. No, they would come to meet and talk and discuss. And also, there are some arts group who come to the library to train for plays they are performing. So it's more than a library. It's a cultural center. So it's not the Edward Said Public Library, but it's the Edward Said Ministry of Culture in the Gaza Strip.
You're listening to Arab Voices, originating on KPFT Houston since 2002 and syndicated on other radio stations in different cities in the U.S. and Europe. This is Said, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. That was Mus'ab Abu Toha, founder of the Edward Said Library, speaking about the library while he was in Houston, Texas. During that event, Mus'ab Abu Toha also read some of his poems from his book, Things You May Find Hidden in My Ear, Poems from Gaza. That book is a winner of the Palestine Book Award, a National Book Critics Circle Award for Poetry finalist, and it has just won a few days ago the American Book Award. In this poetry debut, Mus'ab Abu Toha writes about his life under siege in Gaza, first as a child and then as a young father. A survivor of four Israeli brutal military attacks, he bears witness to a grinding cycle of destruction and assault, and yet his poetry is inspired by a profound humanity. Let's listen to some of Mus'ab's poems.
The latest good news about the book, I mean, it won the Palestine Book Award in November last year. And last January, it was named a finalist for the National Book Critics Circle Award. And there is a ceremony this month in New York City, and they will announce the winners, so wish me luck. I'm going to read a small number of poems just to give you an idea what the book is about. So the first poem, which I told Dr. Samir about, it's called Palestine AZ. So for each letter, I give two words and what these two words mean to me. I didn't give the definition, but I put them in sentences.
A. An apple that fell from the table on a dark evening, when man-made lightning flashed through the kitchen, the streets, and the sky, rattling the cupboards and breaking the dishes. Am is the linking verb that follows I in the present tense, when I am no longer present, when I am shattered. B. A book that doesn't mention my language or my country, and has maps of every place except for my birthplace, as if I were an illegitimate child on Mother Earth. Borders are those invented lines drawn with ash on maps and sewn into the ground by bullets. C. Gaza is a city where tourists gather to take photos next to destroyed buildings or graveyards. A country that exists only in the mind, in my mind, it's a flag has no room to fly freely, but there is space on the coffins of my countrymen. D. Dar means house. My grandparents left their house behind in 1948 near Yaffa Beach. A tree my grandfather told me about stood in the front yard. Dreams of children and their parents of listening to songs or watching plays at Al Mishal Cultural Center. Israel destroyed it in 2018. I hate August, but the plays are still performed in Gaza. Gaza is the stage. E, an email account that I used when the power was on, the email through which I smelled overseas air. I used it first to send photos to my aunt in Jordan, who we last saw in 2000. How easy it becomes to recognize what kind of aircraft it is, an F-16, helicopter, or a drone. What kind of a bullet it was, from a gunboat, an M-16, a tank, or an Apache. It's all about the sound. F, friends from school, from the neighborhood, from childhood, the books in my living room in Gaza, the poems in my notebooks, still lonely. The three friends I lost in 2014 onslaught is Izzat, Ammar, and Ismail. Izzat was born in Algeria, Ammar in Jordan, Ismail on a farm. We buried them all under the cold ground. Fish in our city that the fishermen cannot catch because the Israeli gunboats care about sea life in the Mediterranean. They once fished at the Gaza beach with a barrage of shells, and Huda Ghalia lost her father, stepmother, and five siblings in June 2000. I walked in their funeral procession to the cemetery. Blood was fresh on their clothes. They had poured out some perfume to cover the stench. Over time, my hate for perfume grew intense. G, how are you, Musab? I'm good. I hate this word. It has no meaning to me. Your English is good, Musab. Thanks. When I was asked to fill out a form for my USJ visa application, my country, Palestine, was not on the list. But lucky for me, my gender was. H. If a helicopter stops in the sky over Gaza, we know it is going to shoot a rocket. It doesn't see if a target is close to children playing marbles or soccer in the street. My friend Elise told me, hey, is a slang word and shouldn't be used. English teachers would faint at how what goes on today in written English, she said. I, images on the walls of buildings, a child who was shot by an Israeli sniper or killed during an air raid en route to school. Her picture was placed on her desk at school. Her picture stares at the blackboard while the air sits in her chair. I wake up ill when gloomy ideas about what might have been happened to me come in my dreams. What if I had stopped for a few seconds at the window when a bullet from nowhere ripped through the glass? So there is still more. There are still more parts to this poem, but I'm going to move to the next poem, which is titled, What is Home? What is home? It is the shade of trees on my way to school before they were uprooted. It is my grandparents' black and white wedding photo before the walls crumble. It is my uncle's prayer rug where dozens of ants slept on wintry nights before it was looted and put in a museum. It is the oven my mother used to bake bread and roasted chicken before a bomb reduced our house to ashes. It is the cafe where I watched football matches and played. My child stops me. Can a four-letter word hold all of these? My grandfather and home. One, my grandfather used to count the days for return with my fingers. He then used stones to count. Not enough. He used the clouds, birds, people. Absence turned out to be too long, 36 years until he died. For us now, it is over 70 years. My grandpa lost his memory. He forgot the numbers, the people. He forgot home. Two, I wish I were with you, grandpa. I would have taught myself to write you poems, volumes of them, and paint our home for you. I would have sewn you from soil a garment decorated with the plants and the trees you had grown. I would have made you perfume from the oranges and soap from the sky's tears of joy. Couldn't think of something purer. Three, I go to the cemetery every day. I look for your grave, but in vain. Are they sure they buried you? Or did you turn into a tree? Or perhaps you flew off with a bird to the nowhere? Four, I place your photo in an earthenware pot. I water it every Monday and Thursday at sunset. I was told you used to fast those days. On Ramadan, I water it every day for 30 days or less or more. 5. How big do you want our home to be? I can continue to write poems until you are satisfied. If you wish, I can annex a neighboring planet or two. 6. For this home, I shall not draw boundaries. No punctuation marks. Next poem is Shrapnel Looking for Laughter. I wrote this poem after an Israeli airstrike killed 4 children and their parents. They were trying to escape the building that Israel was intending to bomb. So they were killed under the rubble of their house. So I wrote this poem just in the few hours following that. Shrapnel looking for laughter. The house has been bombed. Everyone dead. The kids, the parents, the toys, the actors on TV, characters in novels, persona in poetry collections, the I, the he, and the she. No pronouns left, not even for the kids when they learn parts of speech next year. Shrapnel flies in the dark, looks for the family's peals of laughter, hiding behind piles of disfigured walls and the bleeding picture frames. The radio no longer speaks. Its batteries have burned. The antenna is broken. Even the broadcaster felt the pain when the radio was hit. Even we, hearing the bomb as it fell, threw ourselves to the ground, each of us counting the others around them. We were safe, but our hearts still ache.
So I'll just read the one poem about a photo I took in Gaza in an UNRWA school. So UNRWA schools and other schools in Gaza turn into a refugee center because people who live in dangerous area, but there is no place in Gaza that is safe. So they go to schools and they think that these schools are safe because they are affiliated with UNRWA, the UN, etc. So I wrote this poem about these kids who are running here and there in the school.
So this is Abu Hussein UNRWA school in North Gaza. So the title of the poem is Midterm Test. The question is, when a drone follows you on your way to school, what is it doing? A, it's keeping an eye on you so you won't get hit by a car. B, it's watching in case you lose your pocket money on the way. C, it's counting your footsteps to make sure you are getting your daily exercise. Or D, it's covering your head in case an F-16 drops a bomb on you by mistake.
I would also read the Edward Said, Noam Chomsky, and Theodore Adorno in Gaza. So that is based on a real incident. That happened 2 years ago. I was in my room and there was an explosion just a few hundred meters away from our house. And one of Edward Said's books that's titled Out of Place, his memoir, his famous memoir. So it fell off the shelf. So I thought that Edward Said was out of place when he was alive. And now after he died, this out of place book is now again out of place. It's really now out of place. And I thought of Noam Chomsky as a friend of Edward Said, trying to help him, stop the bleeding, etc. And then I thought about the sound and the music of the explosion. And there came Adorno as someone Edward Said admired. So this is the panorama of the poem. Okay, so Edward Said, Noam Chomsky, and Theodore Adorno in Gaza. Dust tiptoes in a standing ovation after the explosion. Light hits the icy air, fades into the town's potholes. Edward Said is out of the place again. His books fall from my shelves onto the broken window glass. Palestine is also out of place. Its map falls off my wall. Edward's exile bleeds again of wars, of continued estrangement. Chomsky innately repairs the wounded words, applying bandages from his universal grammar kit. Adorno tries to study the music of the falling bomb and shattering a glass, but the words slipping from the books mystify his sight and mind. The dust covers his glasses. The musical score lies breathless near his shivering feet.
Thank you.
That was Mus'ab Abu Toha, founder of the Edward Said Library, speaking about the library while he was in Houston, Texas, and also reading some of his poems from his book, Things You May Find Hidden in My Ear, Poems from Gaza. That book is a winner of the Palestine Book Award, a National Book Critics Circle Award for Poetry finalist, and it has just won a few days ago the American Book Award. Naomi Shihab Nye, Palestinian-American poet, editor, songwriter, and novelist, wrote about Mus'ab's book, quote, Mus'ab Abu Toha is an astonishingly gifted young poet from Gaza, almost a seer with his eloquent lyrical vernacular. His poems break my heart and awaken it at the same time. I feel I have been waiting for his work all my life. Unquote. I have a link to Mus'ab's book, Things You May Find Hidden in My Ear, Poems from Gaza, on our website, arabvoices.net. You've been listening to Arab Voices, originating on KPFT Houston and syndicated on other radio stations in different cities in the U.S. and Europe. Our shows are archived online, and you can listen to them by visiting arabvoices.net. And that does it for the show today. Thanks for listening. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. Until we meet next week, peace on earth.